another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. With me, I have my co-host Jess Baker. Jess, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I think this is probably our least hectic episode, probably for the next like 5 or 6 weeks. So I'm excited to get into the month of May. I'm disappointed in our listeners that nobody tagged Jess in a Justin Timberlake meme since our last episode, at least that I saw. So let's jump right into it here. I guess let's go with the most surprising news that came out today. Alfonso Celis Jr. getting the Juncos ride for Road America the end of June. Surprising for two reasons. One, he's raced two races in Indy Lights and didn't have a outstanding showing, but you know it was tricky conditions, especially the second race. So I'm willing to give him a little bit of a pass on that one. Two, because back in February, and I think we might have talked about it in one of our February episodes. I think it was one that Matt was on. I don't know why I remember that. But David Malsher from Motorsport.com wrote that Alfonso Celis, who had signed with Juncos' Indy Lights team for 2018, said that he did have options in IndyCar as well, but decided to take the patient approaches to his career. So much for that. But I'll turn it over to you, Jess, for your thoughts now that I've given everybody a quick rundown on the news.
I think my thoughts are very similar to everything I saw on Twitter today, and they go a whole lot like this. Who?
Yes.
I mean, you know, we kind of did the rundown. I got, you know, he's raced in a few things. He's done mediocre in a few things. I think this might be not the best decision ever.
You know, listen, I know at the end of the day, it's probably the almighty dollar talking. Maybe it's a chance to get him up for a race and continue on the rest of the season in Indy Lights. Hopefully I'm right on that guess, but I think what's most interesting or maybe most concerning is Road America is not an easy track. It's definitely not an easy track to make your IndyCar debut on. So, you know, he had a checkered past over in Europe. He had a good season in Formula Renault 3.5 last year. Finished third in the standings, I believe. I have it on my other screen here. He finished third last year with a win, one pole, seven podiums, and 18 races. So not bad, but before that, you have to go all the way back to, 2011 to when he even won a race at all. So I hope Juncos is making the right decision here. I wonder, and I saw it talked about on Twitter that, you know, the more races they get in, you know, they can join that leader's circle to get the, you know, guaranteed, entry winnings next year. So maybe that's kind of a step to, you know, fill out the remaining races that they have left. So I guess we'll see. I hope for the best, but like most of Twitter, I think this was the most surprising driver announcement of the season so far. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. Honestly, because I was trying to think of some of the other ones. Maybe Renee Binder. That one was pretty shocking too. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I just don't think he has the experience to come over and give it a fair shot. I think he needed a little more time, but you know, who knows? I could be totally, totally crazy and he may blow us all away.
Yeah. I mean, listen, crazier things have happened. Nobody would have predicted Alex Rossi won an Indy 500 and is in his, maiden voyage there when he wasn't even sure if he liked ovals before the season started. So I'm cautiously optimistic. Speaking of IndyCar driver news, the unfortunate news that probably everybody knows about now, and Pietro Fittipaldi breaking both his legs in a nasty sports car accident. Hopefully everybody heard about that, and hopefully Pietro comes back very quickly. They said only 8 weeks, which is pretty remarkable considering I think he broke his left femur and his right ankle. I don't remember. It sounded very painful, and looked very painful. So that brings us to Twitter question number one, and I forgot to write down who sent it to us and who do we think is going to replace Pietro. Obviously, we know that Zachary Clamen DeMello is racing this weekend at the Indy GP in Fittipaldi's spot. Before the 500, Jess, I'm going to put you on the spot 6 minutes into the episode here. Who do you think it's going to be? Logically, who do you think it's probably going to be? And what is your, wish, no matter how much of a pipe dream it is?
So, not shocking that you're putting me on the spot right off the bat. I am going to say I don't necessarily know if it's a wish or if it would be the likely candidate. So I'm going to kind of use one person as both, I guess. I think Tristan Vautier would be good to come back. I think he has the experience to jump in and make a decent running for them. Do I think he would compete for a win? Not necessarily, but do I think that he would come in, bring the car back in one piece, and have a decent showing, maybe top 10, maybe even top 5? So I think that would be a safe bet for them.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Vautier would be a good choice. Met him at the opening race in, oh God, where was that? St. Pete. Seems like a nice dude, and was hungry to get back in an Indy car. And unfortunately, this might be his best chance of the year. I also think it would be cool to see Ryan Briscoe join again. I think his last season there, when he raced with Schmidt Peterson for Hinchcliffe's injury replacement, he showed some good pace in some races. Obviously, he had that crazy crash with Sage Karam at Fontana, and I can't remember how he did in the 500 that year, but I think he did pretty decent. So that would be my pick, and then that brings us to Texas, which I think is the only other unfilled Dale Coyne slot for the season now. My guess is they probably stick with, let's just say Tristan Vautier. But then I came across about an hour ago a tweet that said Connor Daly, Dale Coyne, and Tom Burns Racing were holding a press conference tomorrow morning to discuss Connor's 2018 racing plans. I hate cryptic tweets because I don't want to wait until 11:30 Friday morning. Well, I guess by the time you probably listen to this, the announcement's already been made. But I'm gonna throw in my thoughts and guesses here because I've heard a couple theories tossed around. And Jess, I'll turn it over to you for your opinion. I hope it's for Texas and maybe Tom Burns and the Air Force sponsorship are able to pull together maybe even a couple more races for Connor. It would definitely be good for him, and I think good for the series. Voted most popular driver in 2017, and he's still going all over the place promoting IndyCar when he's right now only scheduled to race once in the season. So I think it would be a good thing. I also saw Roush Fenway Racing over in the NASCAR world tweet that they were making a driver announcement tomorrow for, I don't know if it's tomorrow, but soon for the Road America Xfinity race. And it was somebody from Indiana that likes the Pacers and has diabetes, I think. And that pretty much, pretty much narrows it down to Connor Daly or, one of a few other guys. I think Chase Briscoe popped up on the list. When I was doing my research, but what's your early guess on the announcement here? And I guess everybody will be able to tell us if we were right or wrong by the time episode gets released tomorrow.
I would love for it to be Connor Daly. I mean, how many times have I said it? He needs to be an indie full time this year. I think they're crazy for not figuring out a way to put him in a car full time. But on that same note, the person that Dale Coyne usually goes to fill a ride for Texas is Pippa Mann. Do I want her to be there? No, I'd much rather have Connor. However, if history repeats itself, you know, that is a possibility. That, you know, I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention it at least.
That's fair. Did Vautier race Texas last year, or am I losing my mind?
No, you might be right. I can't remember.
Yeah. I should record the fact that you said I might be right and save that for future use.
I didn't
use.
Say you were right. I said you might be right.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, that's better than I hear most of the time anyway.
You'll have to Google it because I honestly can't remember. But yeah, and as far as the Roush Fenway thing goes, that's actually, you are the first person that I've heard that from. It could be because I don't follow much NASCAR news, so and if it was retweeted a bunch, I obviously just didn't pay any attention because it was NASCAR. So yeah, that would be interesting though. I mean, he's expressed his interest, so it wouldn't be, I guess, necessarily a shocker because he's been saying he wants to do it. So heck yeah, go give it a try, bud.
Yeah, I mean, listen, anything that keeps you racing until you can get that full-time seat in IndyCar, hopefully in 2019. You know, I do hope, the thing that makes me, you know, hopeful, I'll say, that it's an IndyCar-related announcement is, you know, if it was some sort of NASCAR-related announcement, why do we have Dale Coyne there? I don't think Dale Coyne's going to be doing NASCAR anytime soon in any capacity. Unless Roush Fenway is paying him a boatload of money for some reason, which doesn't make any sense to me. So, you know, just my thoughts, who knows? I guess we'll know at 11:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. They're doing the announcement in Indianapolis. So I guess we'll find out there. And thanks to Wikipedia, Tristan Vautier did race at Texas last year, Jess. And had a fantastic start. I remember jumped up from 7th or 8th all the way up to 1st or 2nd for a while until that got caught up in that crazy Hinchcliffe, Kanaan, Michaela Lotion crash and finished 16th. But that was his only race last year.
I will give you then that you were correct, sir.
Yes, thank you. Doesn't happen very often that I'm the right one here, but I will take the victory wherever I can get it, because we sure know that my fantasy IndyCar standings have taken a nosedive in the past race or two. All right, so we're done with Alfonso Celis. Best of luck to him. Should be interesting. I hope he can improve on his Indy Lights efforts at Indianapolis this weekend and in 2 weeks to get some confidence going, but I guess we shall see. You want to turn it over to a fan question, Jess?
Yeah, let me pull them up real quick so that I've got them and don't misquote anything here. Okay, so I'm going to be honest. I don't know people's real names, so forgive me. But our Twitter follower, Butts is Nuts 4, is asking us, our best driver not to win the Indy 500. So you go. We're putting you on the spot this time.
Jess, I think this is the first time in 21 episodes you've put me on the spot. Matt will be very proud of you. I'm going to go with Dan Gurney. You know, obviously, Gurney is an Indy legend, IndyCar legend in every aspect, and an all-around racing legend winning at Formula One, NASCAR, Can-Am Racing, Trans Am Racing, won Le Mans, obviously won races in IndyCar, finished second in the Indy 500 in 1968 and 1969, and third in 1970, and somehow only led 2 laps total in his 9 Indy 500 appearances. So, I mean, kind of shocking. When I looked up more detail about Gurney and not winning the 500, the fact that he only led 2 laps in 9 Indy 500s was really eye-opening to me. So that's my pick, and I'll turn it over to you.
So, I will agree. Extremely, extremely good driver there. Obviously, we've shouted him out a few times. I am gonna go with somebody a little closer to our era, I guess. People that, I have actually seen race in the 500. Although, don't get me wrong. I'm not taking anything away from your Dan Gurney because I fully agree with you on that one, which is also odd. But I'm going to say Tony Stewart.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that man can drive the wheels off of just about everything. And the fact that he never won it makes me sad, only because how cool would it be to, win the 500, win the Brickyard, win the IndyCar Championship, win the NASCAR Championship? I mean, it would be pretty cool. So I think I'm gonna have to say him.
I can't argue with that one. The only one I was gonna add, and not that he was my favorite driver, and I know he is or was not your favorite driver, but the fact that hard charging Paul Tracy never won an Indy 500. Well, some might debate that he did win the 500, and was that in 92? I guess I'll save that debate for an off season episode when we don't have plenty to talk about. But the fact that he never won a 500, is a little surprising considering how strong his career there was until the early 2000s when he started to slow down a little bit. But good question there, thank you. I think his name is George Butts. Butts is nuts for on Twitter. Thank you for that. Switching gears here, talked about Fittipaldi. Now, I'm gonna bring this up, and I forget the guys. I'll save that one towards the end. Props to Chris Windham for winning his opening races of the weekend for, in his sprint car before he gets to the Freedom 100 in a couple weeks here. And from all accounts, had an extremely successful open wheel test at Kentucky Speedway. So props to Chris. I hope to speak with him at some point. I know we'll have him on the show at some point in the next month or two here, hopefully before the Freedom 100, but if he wins it, then definitely afterwards too. So we shall see on that one. Let's talk about the Indy GP real quick. This has been a hotly debated race on will it improve or won't it improve? Because the last few years haven't been super fantastic racing with the new aero kit. But in 2014, the first year of the race, it was an awesome race. Obviously, a rough start with this attempted standing start and Sebastian Savedra making it 0 feet, along with a couple other guys. What do you think? Are we going to have a better race with this better aero kit, or is the Indy GP in trouble?
I think that the aero kit is going to dramatically help. After seeing it in action, in St. Pete, I think it's going to be a good race. I'm not going to say that there is not going to be room for improvement because I still think there is. I think that the track is part of the problem. It's not just the car. But I think that there will be some improvement. Now, whether it's enough to save it or not is another question.
So, in your expert opinion here, what do you think the race needs improvement wise, on the track? Is it a change in corners, or is it just a totally different layout? Maybe back
I
to
think
the I'm sorry, back to the US Grand Prix F1 race layout, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool. The chicane was nice. I think that yeah, opening the corners, letting there be a little more passing. I think it's a little narrow in spots. I mean, overall, the layout isn't horrible. It just needs a little bit of tweaking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's definitely going to be a step in the right direction this year, and we shall see how it improves going forward. And I'm sure the race will still be on the track, especially with how high the attendance is for the 500 this year. I think the track will have plenty of money to continue, and hopefully we see a presenting sponsor again. But let's go back to a fan question from at Lone Wolf Graham. I think his name is Gregorio, if I remember correctly. How will the potential NASCAR sale affect IndyCar, or will it affect IndyCar, and how do we see it affecting it? So, Jess, instead of putting you on the spot, I'll start for a change.
What?
I know. I was pretty shocked to see it, but at the same time, the writing's kind of been on the wall with how dismal the attendance and the racing has been. Even Dover, which had more of its stands filled than I expected, the stands were pretty empty, and I attempted to watch it the other night on replay, and after about 15 laps, I kind of lost interest pretty quickly. Felt like a, God, what do I want to call it here? Follow the leader type experience, and that was about it. How can it affect IndyCar? I'm not sure. Other than two things. One thing I've read online. Thank you to Facebook for this, and another is just kind of my own musings. If NASCAR being for sale shows that there is some NASCAR weakness, that can only be good for IndyCar. People are going to start paying attention to IndyCar more and more. I believe that's already been the case. We see the 500 ticket sales up, attendance so far this year at tracks is up, and with the NBC contract, I think it's only going to keep improving from the TV perspective. But I'd be curious if a new NASCAR buyer maybe eliminates some of the racetracks from its schedule, and maybe IndyCar picks up a race or two, say Kentucky, like I mentioned earlier, or Michigan, which might be less likely. Maybe another oval or two to, make the schedule closer to 50-50 between right and left turns and only left turns. I think that would be the biggest way that it affects IndyCar, visibly, and obviously, I think indirectly financially, it'll help because you'll get more people paying attention to IndyCar races now. Jess.
I would like to go with your pipe dream and say that
Yeah.
it'll give IndyCar more races. That would be super, especially if it was more ovals. Do I see that happening quickly? No, not really. I think that the potential sale of NASCAR could be good for IndyCar because the fans who have preached NASCAR's greatness for so long are finally going to see that maybe NASCAR is not as great as they thought. That things really are kind of closer to the doom and gloom that people have been saying than they were willing to believe. And maybe, just maybe, they'll tune in and watch an IndyCar race because what happens if NASCAR goes away? I'm not saying NASCAR is going to go away. Sure. I think that's crazy, but, you know, people tend to kind of over-exaggerate things in these kind of situations, so maybe the fans will start to venture out to see what's around, and, you know, if it can bring more eyeballs to the 500 or, you know, wherever, if it's a close racetrack to them instead of on TV, maybe they'll want to go and see one in person. I mean, that's great.
Yeah, I think that last point is definitely the biggest point is, you know, maybe people will get fed up with what's going on in the NASCAR world and start paying a little bit more attention, which I think is probably the most likely. I know my pipe dream of tracks switching gears to IndyCar is probably a long shot, but it would be interesting if the new NASCAR owner or majority owner said, listen, one way to improve us is to, you know, narrow down on the, you know, total number of races. So, good question, Mr. Lone Wolf Graham. I think your name is Gregorio. I'm really sorry if I forgot. Moving on, let's go with another fan question here. Best driver not to win. Oh, we did that one. I'm
sorry.
We
did that one.
Which female racer from any series would you want to see in the Indy 500 after Danica? And that is from @Colin_R Taylor, loyal longtime listener and great Twitter follow for IndyCar stuff. So, Jess, I'm going to put you on the spot on this one to start.
That's cool. I got mine right. I mean, this is an easy one. Now, she did retire, so there is that. But I would love to see Alexis DeJoria come over and just run it one time, because that girl has got some nerves of steel. And I would love to see her just get in one of the cars. Now, granted, obviously, she's never done anything like it, but that's my pipe dream for this episode.
That's fair. Fantastic choice. Definitely well thought out. I'm going to go with two, if that's okay. One is kind of obvious, and I've seen tossed around online before. And I'm not sure Graham Rahal would be too happy to have his wife driving an IndyCar. But, you know, Courtney Force, I mean, the Force family is insanely impressive in their NHRA races. And I think, you know, she's young enough that she could make the transition and give it a shot. I mean, really, any of the Force family would be cool to see in an IndyCar, you know, half because their name is Force, and that's a fantastic racing name. But more of a, I don't know if I want to say long shot, or this probably won't happen for many years, but there's an F4 driver by the name of Angela Durazzo, who I think is a listener of the show. I know we've talked a handful of times about the show, who suffers from rheumatoid arthritis, which, from what I understand, is extremely painful to deal with at a young age, so you know, would be cool to see her overcome something, you know, so severe to race in the Indy 500. And I think this is her first year in open wheel cars in F4 this year, so probably got some time for that one. But would be pretty cool to see, you know, somebody overcome something so severe like that.
That would be quite the story, especially if she, you know, just made her debut in May. It would be a great May story.
Yeah, of course. I guess another female driver I'd like to see in the 500 who's raced in the 500 before, and I know she's been mentioned as hopeful for the Dale Coyne 500 spot, but I don't know if she carries any money with her, and I think it's pretty unlikely, but Catherine Legg has really kind of revived her career for Michael Schenck Racing and Team Acura. Won a bunch of races, I believe, without looking it up off the top of my head, and has stated that she thinks the new car would be great for her. But then again, every driver who wants to race IndyCar and isn't racing IndyCar has said the exact same thing. But Yeah, that would be another one. I think she would probably more than hold her own in the 500 at any point.
Yeah, I think she would do very well in the 500, and I kind of have to agree with her. I think the car would suit her driving style. She kind of likes to wheel it a little bit more.
Yeah, and she just following up on my has she improved since she switched over to sports cars? She did have her first two sports car wins in the Acura for Michael Shank Racing last year at Detroit and Watkins Glen. So and a second place finish at a couple other tracks. So good for her. I think she's definitely a good one of the better drivers that isn't in IndyCar right now. Maybe in the top 10 that could be an IndyCar. That maybe deserves another chance, but I guess we'll just see. I get the feeling based on everything that you and I have probably read online that it's probably a long shot she gets the 500 ride, but I think it would definitely be an interesting one to add a third female race driver to the 500 this year. And Jess, can you name me? I'm going to throw a trivia question out there, and if anybody online can get this, I'll throw in some sort of prize. The only year there was more than three Indy 500 women entries was what year?
Oh, give me a second because I know who they all are, but I can't remember the year.
Okay, go ahead and name them.
It was Sarah Fisher, Simona Di Silvestro, Danica Patrick, and oh, I can see her. I can see her.
I see her face.
Yeah, I'm gonna say 2011.
Close. I naturally the link has disappeared from my screen, but I think it was 2013, and the name you are missing is Anna Beatrice.
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
I'm like, I even remember watching her. She went and did she did a thing with the Indiana Ice hockey team. I think it was still the Ice then. She like did a puck drop night, and I remember her being there. I just cannot remember her name.
Yes, Anna Beatrice, who is currently doesn't look like she's racing anywhere now, but raced in the 500 in 2010, 2011, 2012, and 2013 with Dale Coyne. So obviously she is not in contention for the seat this year, but just a little trivia fact there that we'll throw in. Let's see, another fan question. And Jess, I'm going to put you on the spot on this one, even though you've probably already done your research for it. Thanks to @DLight_47. When did you become an IndyCar fan, and who was your first favorite driver?
I was five. I'm not going to tell you all what year that was, but I was five. I got into it on TV. I thought it was really cool. My very first 500, I was six. I did talk my parents into going that year, and this is actually going to be the first 500 I have missed since then. So it's a little sad this year, but. I would say my favorite driver then would have been Lynn St. James, but she very quickly lost me as a fan because she would not sign an autograph for me, no matter how many hours I stood there and waited for her.
Double sad face emoji.
Yep.
I guess it was probably when I was very little. I don't remember how old I was, but my dad working in timing and scoring when pre digital age, and my grandfather and great grandfather being members of IndyCar race control. I think before I was born, I was kind of just born into it. So I'll say at birth, even though I don't remember any of the races in 1987 or those first couple years other than the 1987 Indy 500 poster on my wall. But it's just kind of always been a part of me. Actually, the year I finally am able to make it out to Indianapolis, Jess, you won't be there. My first favorite driver, my first, I picked to win at my very first race at Nazareth Speedway was Paul Tracy. My first favorite driver that I, really rooted for race in and race out was Sam Hornish when he was coming up with Patrick Racing and then Panther Racing and then with Penske. I still am annoyed that he went to stock car racing, or I shouldn't say annoyed, I'm mad at him. And if I saw him, I would tell him I'm angry at him. I'm sure he would care. I thought he was, he was a great driver in an era of, insanely close finishes at so many tracks. I think if you look at the top 10 closest finishes in IndyCar history, he's in I don't know, five or six of them, and including the second closest finish at Indianapolis when he passed Marco on the back straightaway. And I will never forget that race, and I watched those last couple lap highlights multiple times a year, especially as we get closer to the race. Sorry, Marco. That was probably his best chance to win the race, since then was that year. I guess I'll go with Sam Hornish there. I know Roger Penske asked him to do stock cars after he had dominated IndyCar for so long, but I think, wins wise and championship wise, he'd be up there with the legends of IndyCar if he had stayed in IndyCar. That's just my opinion. I don't know if you disagree with that one, but I'll let you add in your thoughts there.
I think he could have been, but I mean, you can't. I know you hated him because you were a kid, but you can't hate a guy for wanting to go and make more money. So I
Yep,
mean,
I get
there's,
it.
looking back on things, it's a little different than what we had pictured in our mind when we were kids and thinking about it. But yeah, I'll tell you the first driver, who was my favorite driver who ended up winning the 500 was Kenny Brack, and I cannot tell you how excited I was that year. I cried. I still have the Indianapolis Star, and I got it autographed by both him and AJ Foyt, and that might be my prized possession.
Yeah, that's fair. I think my IndyCar prized possession is the 1987 Indy 500 poster I have, thanks to my brother's eBay find last year. I've since looked for, other years from when I was little, and 87, the year I was born, is the only one we could find. So, yeah, that would definitely be my Indy prized possession. So let's see here. We're coming up on the 40-minute mark. I guess, we forgot to mention earlier, this episode this week is brought to you by, again, by SoundQ Audio, who is developing some sort of racing audio communications for drivers. I don't exactly know how it works or what it is, but it's in development, and we're partnering with them to, promote it when we hear more about it going forward. Their owner is actually Juan Arenas, who's a former Formula Renault driver, and I believe if RC Enerson's able to get an IndyCar ride next year, they've been talking with RC on some sponsorship possibilities. So, oh, and I can't forget to mention that they also partner with the Lucas Oil School of Racing. So, thank you to SoundQ Audio for the sponsorship, and we'll be sure to promote their social medias and everything on Twitter throughout the weekend, in all our tweets and so forth. Jess, do you want to get into the pitfalls this week? Is there anything I forgot to mention before we get into that?
I don't recall anything else going on that's worth talking about yet. But yeah, I'll start my pitfall this week is kind of silly. It's just me, you know, me being me, me complaining a little bit. It's what I do.
I like it.
And I've seen a lot of other people kind of poking fun at it and complaining a little bit on social media. But really, Penske, we're going to make three cars look exactly the same. Like, really? Because it's not hard enough to tell two cars apart that look the same. We're going to make all three. And the numbers are freaking tiny. And that's the only thing they're changing the colors on this year. So I have to complain a little bit about the color schemes. Like, can't we make them slightly different, like different nose cone, or I don't even know, like just something to make them a little bit more distinguishable. Because if you're sitting in the stands and it's sunny outside, the chances of you being able to tell which is very low.
Yeah, you know, it's frustrating or disappointing, and you know, that the only difference is, you know, New Garden has a black stripe and Power has a red stripe, and then their color of the numbers on the back wings are different. Definitely a little disappointing to see, or not be able, maybe not see. Speaking of this weekend, I don't know if you noticed, it came out today that IndyCar has asked teams to remove the digital panel, you know, that displays what position they're in, and just put a, you know, a whatever car number they have there as a placeholder until they can get some software issues worked out that showed up during the Speedway test last week. Just thought I'd mention that real quick. And I am going to pull up this guy's name real quick. But there was a driver in the Cars Tour Hickory 300, which is a late model tour. His name is unfortunately not showing up in this article here, but you can find it on shorttrackscene.com. Was involved in an accident where he bumped into another car after the race. He wasn't happy, like just about any race car driver is when he gets crashed out of a race. And from all accounts, he, you know, cursed up a storm a little bit, and the sheriff set the track, and some team members pulled him away, and that was that. There was no punches thrown, and the dude got suspended for the entire season. I just, you know, it seems very harsh to get suspended the entire season for, you know, just arguing. You know, I think if that were the case, Will Power would have been suspended for the double birds a couple years ago. AJ Foyt would have suspended more years than not. You know, who knows? And now that I have the article finally loaded in front of me here, the driver suspended was Brandon Setzer, and the car owner, I guess, was his dad in Dennis Setzer. And the Cars Tour has already, you know, come out and said, we are not changing we are not changing our ruling. So I know it's not a major series, you know, it's not even minor league NASCAR car series. I had actually never heard of the Cars Tour. It's only a handful of races throughout the year. It's the super late model cars. But it seems like a lot for, you know, just arguing with somebody.
Yeah, especially with your point of, you know, some of the drivers who would have probably never been able to race. I mean, honestly, I mean, how about Gabby Chavez? Probably.
Oh,
be
yeah. No, in this case, so I'm reading the article here. You know, the suspension and fine stems from Brandon Setzer and Dennis Setzer entering the pit area of the other driver with the intention of starting a physical altercation. If that's the case, Pagano would be suspended for the year, and Chavez would be suspended for a while for, you know, standing his ground. And I mean, who knows? We'd probably have to go through. I gotta remember Helio losing his mind after a race a couple of years ago. Obviously,
Danica, how many times?
Danica, Willpower, and the famous double birds in New Hampshire or wherever that was. I mean, we could go through almost every driver in IndyCar, and probably 98% of them in NASCAR too, and probably some in F1. So I don't understand how you can say with the intention of starting a physical altercation, because, you know, I'm going to take an IndyCar example here to make sense of it for everybody. You know, Pagano going to Gabby Chavez's pit stall last week. I don't think Pagano had any intention of trying to punch or drop kick or karate chop Gabby Chavez. He just wanted to go over there and yell and speak his mind. But we don't need to go more into that. I feel like this was probably going to be the same thing, and he, you know, didn't get his wish because he got pulled away before that. But I mean, I don't know. It seems like a gross exaggeration for something that happens in every sport when somebody is angry at somebody else.
I'm gonna give the series the benefit of the doubt here. Because obviously it's a series that you and I don't follow. So I don't know what their rules are. If it's clearly stated in their rule book that they're not allowed to enter another driver's pit after the race to discuss the race without maybe a presence of an official or something like that. You know, if it's pre-stated up front and these guys know this, then... okay, I can see it. Now, do I agree with it? No. I think it's a little bit overkill, but at the same time, maybe they're trying to, maybe they've had some kind of physical altercation in the past that led to some injuries or something, and they're trying to prevent something of that nature. But again, you know, I don't follow the series. I don't know what the rules are. But I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt here.
I hate you for doing that. I shouldn't say I hate you. I'm mad at you for doing that. you know, the series president said we don't want our series to be known for fights at every event, which I don't see how you can say. And I've done, you know, minimal research on the Cars Tour since then, but it doesn't look like there's fighting at every race, and I think, you know...
obviously!
otherwise we'd probably hear about it more. Racing enthusiasts, you know, those who probably listen to this show and any other racing podcast or, you know, that watch races, you know, they don't go to races for the fights. Well, I mean, maybe a few do, but 99.8% of them don't go to a race to... watch a fight. Some people who follow other forms of racing might go to watch racing for the big crashes, but that, you know, again is the minority, and I would hardly say is the case in IndyCar as well. So again, I don't agree with that, and I get it. I know you have to give the series the benefit of the doubt. One of us does, but I'm not giving them the benefit of the doubt on this one. I know Brandon Setzer and team owner Dennis Setzer have both appealed the suspension and the fine, but I mean, come on, guys, a little, you know, maybe they're just trying to drum up some publicity for the series, and before they go, okay, well, we're just going to fine you and suspend you for a race. Who knows? But either way. I mean, I think the internet agrees with us for the most part, or at least 99.8% of the internet does. Everything I've read has said that they don't understand it either. And with that, before we wrap it up, remember to check out wildfireradiosports.com, our gracious radio network that plays us every Friday from 3:15 to 4:15 Eastern. And, you know, continue to check us out on iTunes or Spotify or CastBox seems to be the popular one where Hinchcliffe has his podcast. And I've seen some people listening on there. So, you know, thank you to all the listeners. We are going to announce a contest either on Friday or Saturday. It'll be posted on social media. So check that out at Pit Lane Parlay. And there are just maybe 3 or 4 NJ Fry We Trust shirts left. So get your order in while you can. I'll bring the extras with me to Indianapolis starting next Wednesday. So if you are at the track and would like to purchase one, please let me know. They'll either be in my bag or in my hotel room where I can grab them. So, you know, check it out. Join in our discussion on Twitter and social media at Pit Lane Parlay on just about all the social medias. And maybe I'll try to do some more Instagram posts at Indianapolis starting next week and maybe live stream some practice from whatever angle I have. Thanks to those who voted on my quick little poll yesterday. Jess, did I miss anything?
Not that I can think of.
Well, IndyCar fans, enjoy the last few days of calm before the craziness of the Indy GP and Indy 500 season kicks off. And Jess, I'll let you sign it off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.